In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, following the truth wherever it leads, exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites, revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality, coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
If you're a fan of this radio program and the Strange Planet podcast, why not show it off by wearing Strange Planet apparel or drinking from a Strange Planet mug? Check out all the great Strange Planet merch in my Strange Planet shop. Just go to the website strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca, and click on shop in the menu. There's a huge selection of men's and women's t-shirts. You like crop circles or the Mayan calendar? Gotcha covered. Are you into the Anunnaki? Wait till you see these designs. My favorite right now, lions do not lose sleep over the opinions of sheep. And one of our best sellers right now, Truth Gets You Crucified on the front and a passage from Matthew chapter 23 on the back. So many great t-shirt designs, I don't know where to begin. There's women's leggings and tote bags and, of course, mugs. Great gifts for family and friends who listen and love this show. My Strange Planet shop. Visit today and often. Just go to strangeplanet.ca and check it out.
William Peters, a pioneer in the field of shared death experiences, stays with us, founder of the Shared Crossing Project and author of At Heaven's Door. And we'll remind you again, if you go to sharedcrossing.com. sharedcrossing.com, and you can sign up for the 7-module live online course Wednesdays beginning April 27th to June the 8th. Again, sharedcrossing.com. And what is the code that my listeners can use for a 10% discount?
Shared Crossing, that's all caps, then the number 10. For 10% off.
Shared Crossing, all in caps, and then the number 10. All right. Let's kind of reset because this is hour two, and there may be some people just joining the program. Give us the definition for a shared death experience, or SDE.
Yeah, so a shared death experience occurs when somebody dies and a loved one, caregiver, and in some cases a bystander, reports that they feel like they shared in the dying person's transition from their human existence in their, you know, in their human body into an afterlife. And this is typically, the phenomena are these phenomena that in our culture we relate to as near-death experience phenomena. So out-of-body experiences, visionary realms, heavenly realms, past life review, life reviews of either the dying or your time together with the dying. There's light is a big feature of this. You're often traveling in a cylinder of light or towards a big luminous light, and you see deceased loved ones as a greeting party, elevated beings of all types that can appear as angels or light beings, spirit guides, what have you. Oh, and of course, the most common phenomena is that the experiencer, surviving loved one or caregiver, reports seeing the dying in this transition. They're moving along with them in many of these cases as they progress, typically heading upwards in their journeys into this afterlife.
You are a hospice volunteer. You mentioned, obviously doctors, nurses, first responders, let's say, for example, a firefighter with the jaws of life trying to get at a car accident victim. Do they on occasion also experience an SDE?
Yes, they do. And this is one of the focus points of the Shared Crossing Project, and that is advocacy for the knowledge of these experiences for first responders of all kinds, because there are a few studies out there that talk about spiritual experiences for first responders where they feel like the spirit of the deceased came to them and they somehow didn't know how to make sense of it, and it kind of freaked them out. And yes, so in my experience when I've worked with first responders in this regard is by teaching them about the shared death experience and the various phenomena, the first responders have these aha moments, like, oh, wait a minute, I was just with them. That makes sense. It's like, oh, I can let it go. I thought that somehow there was something weird about this, and that, so yes, first responders have these, and they need education and support around this so they don't feel like they're being freaked out by a wayward spirit. And I will say that these cultures, this is by the expressions of the first responders we've interviewed, is that in some of these cultures, it's not really, shall we say, professionally acceptable to share about these experiences. So we're trying to change that because we want people to know, first responders and others, to know these experiences happen. They're actually, more common than we know, and you may be gifted by someone dying coming to you to appreciate you or show you the other side or perhaps even deliver a message to a loved one, especially if it's a first responder dealing with a sudden, unexpected, tragic death. You may be the last person they communicate with in this way.
We know that people that have near-death experiences and come back, oftentimes that just changes the trajectory of their life, forever. Has such a profound impact. Sometimes I've read there have actually been physical changes in that person. In other words, they look different when they come back, and their life is never the same, and the things that they were interested in, they leave all of that behind. Sometimes it can be the end of relationships because those two people are strangers now. What about the person that has the shared death experience? Can it have that kind of long-lasting impact? Can it totally irrevocably change the trajectory of their life and who they are as a person?
Yeah, I guess this is a wonderful question. And you just to affirm what you just, the research you cited for the near-death experiences, of which I've had two near-death experiences, yes, the profoundness of the near-death experience is significant, and the changes, transformations you identified are well known amongst us who research the NDEs. In the shared-death experience, we don't see that, what I would call, challenge in coming back to your life and the need to, primary relationships don't seem to be as challenged. I think there are significant transformations, but, and this is important because these transformations are typically invitational in the sense that we do see SDE experiences coming back and saying things like, I now know the purpose of the human life generally, and I now understand that I have a purpose here during my lifetime, and I'm either going to, I know what it is, I'm going to get about living it right now and make significant changes, or they're going to commit themselves to finding out, or searching, if you will, for a higher calling in their life. But to be clear, unlike the near-death experience, we don't seem at this point. Now, if we do more research on this, I could take back these words I'm speaking right now. But it seems like shared-death experiences, perhaps because they're witnesses to these experiences, they're witnessing a dying person's transition. They're not experiencing a trauma. They're not experiencing a direct threat to their life. The impact in that way is less. And that doesn't mean that the transformation is less for the SDE experiencer. I think it's less when you consider the physical challenges that so many NDEers have to come back and deal with because they've had a severe brush with death that's compromised their physiology in some significant way. For the SDE, they're healthy in mind and body, they come back, and now their work is to integrate this experience, but it doesn't seem to have some of the overt negative ramifications that the NDEs have.
How about your NDEs? Were they traumatic?
Well, yes. My first one was a high-speed skiing accident at 17 years old, where I fractured the lumbars 4 and 5 and some compression fracture that went also into a sacroiliac 1. So, yeah, that almost, as my orthopedic surgeon indicated, that I was 1/32nd of an inch away from being a paraplegic. So I've lived in, some degree of chronic pain and physical limitation for most of my adult life. That's a significant trauma at the level, not just physically with the pain and such, but also at the level of identity. Who am I? I mean, I was the athlete prior to that time, and I never was able to regain that sense of strength and confidence and vitality in my physical body. It's really been a struggle to maintain health and ease of movement. So those are significant traumas. And my second experience left me, it was an idiopathic thrombocytopenia, for those who are in the medical profession. That's a crashing platelet, low platelet condition that is terminal, life-threatening. And that left me deeply fatigued and somewhat lost there wasn't a great deal of pain in it. It was more just low energy and disorientation as my body tried to rebalance after the severe imbalance in my blood. So, yes, my NDEs were quite traumatic for me and quite impactful upon my life, and they remain so today.
Near death, but did you get the whole experience, sort of, the welcoming party, the tunnel of light?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, my near-death experience, my first near-death experience, now, Richard, remind me, did I share my first near-death experience? I don't think I did.
The skiing accident, yes, the skiing accident.
Yeah, that's it. So that's my first near-death experience. So, yeah, I mean, I did not have a welcoming party in mind at all, which is, I mean, it's not so much every SDE, every NDE is unique. So to say that, wow, I didn't have a full NDE, well, that's not true at all. I had a rather full NDE, but I didn't have a welcoming party, and the only elevated being I saw or felt was what I would call God, the ultimate source, which I was negotiating for my life with. So, you know, in terms of whether I could come back or not. So, yeah, help me out. Am I answering the question here?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. How did that negotiation go? I mean, what did you put on the table?
Well, I just said I wanted to come back because I really, you know, unlike so many near-death experiencers, I felt like I hadn't completed what I incarnated to do in this life. And even though I was 17 years old, that was the one thing I was clear about, was that I did not complete my mission, if you will. I wanted to come back and do something. I don't know what it was. But I also had the sense that I knew that I'd have to come back and incarnate again. And I said, I don't want to do those childhood years again. So I had a sense that a lot of my, you know, reason for being in that lifetime was coming up for me. I was preparing for the work of my life, if you will. And I didn't want to go through childhood again if, in fact, I was leaving at that point, dying at that point, leaving that life, and then would have to come back again and somehow recreate the conditions to pursue or complete that life mission. And I, you know, you're hearing a lot about my kind of cosmological views, if you will, my theological, philosophical views on the purpose and meaning of a human life. But it seemed pretty clear to me in that point that when we come to this earth or this human experience to, develop, practice, have certain experiences, and I was getting close to those in that lifetime when I had my first NDE. And so the negotiation was not so much me negotiating as much as me pleading with God, let me go back, let me go back, let me go back. And at some point I felt this push back from the light. I was really in the light, comfortable. I felt the push back from the light, and a telepathic communication makes something of your life.
And in either of the NDEs, do you know whether there was also a shared death experience with someone close to you?
No, I did not. That's a question that's never been asked of me, Richard. That's a brilliant question. And no, I do not. I did not feel I shared that with anybody. I don't think anyone shared it. No one ever came up to me afterwards or at any point in my life to express that I was with you during that SDE or I saw you there.
So if a person has an NDE and comes back, they wouldn't necessarily know that there was a shared death experience.
Well, that's a great question too. I mean, it could very well be that somebody could say, well, I was with you, I saw you there. And, you know, this is the work of mediums who, there are more than just mediums who can do this. But I have talked to people who, mediums in particular, who have said, I see that experience. And you may say, well, that's bizarre. They could see that experience. Well, they're accessing perhaps the Akashic Record or something like that. I use these terms loosely, just not because I don't believe they don't exist. I use it because I'm not an expert in these, in the Akashic Records or other modalities of this sort that give access to lifetimes or these types of near-death experiences that are in another dimension. But I have had that experience where a couple mediums have said, oh, yeah, I'm seeing that now. You had this type of experience. You were here. You were there. I'm like, oh, wow, this is all recorded somewhere. So they're not having a shared death experience with me in real time, so to speak. They're able to go back and see what I went through, which is very compelling in and of itself.
Right, right. How do medical doctors, you know, people of science, and I know medicine is also an art, but these are men and women of science. And some of them, you know, are materialists. They don't have a spiritual bone in their body. And I mean, we've seen studies, for example, I think there was one in Switzerland where they tried to replicate an out-of-body experience by stimulating certain cortexes in the brain and said, aha, you see, it's just electrical activity. It's an illusion. It's the product of a dying brain or whatever. But the materialists that have these experiences, how do they try to explain it away? Do they have a narrative?
Well, you're on it. I mean, the SDE is unexplainable to the scientific materialists of today and medical sciences who adhere to that scientific view. To be clear, the hitch, if you will, occurs because in the modern scientific materialist view, which is dominant in medical sciences, is that consciousness is dependent upon and created by the human brain. So when there is human death, which is cessation of brain functioning, there can no longer be consciousness. So, or any continuation of any aliveness that would be identified with a soul, spirit, self related to that human life just ended. There's no scientific explanation for that. So for that community, these experiences don't have any credibility because they can't exist in their paradigm. But the problem, as we know, is in the paradigm. It's not in the experience. The paradigm is too limited. Now, this being said, there's plenty of research that that suggests that, you know, while I think 73% of Americans in the last Pew study on questions about religion and spirituality, one of which is a belief in an afterlife, you know, like I said, almost 73% or three-quarters of North Americans and Europeans believe in an afterlife. And medical doctors, there was a similar study done in, I believe it was University of Chicago, I think it was 10, 15 years ago, that found that, you know, 65% of doctors had similar beliefs. So, you know, two-thirds of doctors believe in an afterlife. But they're able to somehow, though their personal beliefs, spiritual religious beliefs, don't jive with their medical beliefs. And I don't know how people, you know, make sense of that, but your question about how the medical sciences and medical personnel make sense of this, I've explained, they don't. They don't have a model that holds this. Now, there are plenty within the system, that medical system, that acknowledge the limitations of medical sciences, and those are the people that I think are the doctors you want to be dealing with, and those are the ones that we're dealing with, because we need to find a way to make these experiences a part of healthcare, especially at end of life.
So, William, there are certain people that have spontaneous out-of-body experiences. It's not even necessarily associated with trauma. They just, all of a sudden, you know, they wake up and maybe they're floating above their body. Is there a connection between those spontaneous OBEs and an NDE and a shared, or an SDE, a shared death experience?
You know, once again, you're spot on. There are these spontaneous OBEs. Most OBEs have some sort of trauma induction, if you will, but a lot don't. And there are people who can develop practices, can and do develop practices where they can initiate OBEs. There's a whole, you know, organization. I forget. It's you know, Luis Minero runs a whole program I forget the name of it, something about consciousness. Yeah, and they train people how to have OBEs. But there's not much, you know, in the SDE arena. What's so profound about the SDEs is that, one, they're not very well known at all. In fact, I'd say that, you know, my book, At Heaven's Door, is the most widely read and, you know, clearly the first really research-based expose on the shared death experience, and it's only been out since January. But thankfully, the receptivity in the general public and even end-of-life professionals has been quite positive, thankfully. I think they're the same type of experience, especially when they happen, shall I say, naturally. I think there are ways that you can create, you know, dissociative experiences or experiences where your sense of self, if you were, that observing part of your consciousness is detached from your physical body, or at least outside of it, perceiving from outside your physical body. But I just think the SDE is a natural, organic process similar to the NDE that is invoked by usually some sort of trauma. I hope that makes sense in a certain way. But I'll tell you that there will be more research in this area, this whole understanding of how one's consciousness can seemingly have a perception, a view of perception or perspective that is outside of the physical body and looking back at the physical human body. This is a rather profound reality that needs to be explored.
All right, let's go to the YouTube live chat, and you're going to get a kick out of some of the handles here from the YouTube live chat. Not Gordian, K-N-O-T, as in a Gordian knot. Not Gordian asks, William, have you ever heard of negative stories of NDEs or SDEs when somebody saw glimpses of hell instead of heaven?
Yes. So there is a good deal of research on negative or what they call distressing near-death experiences. And the author on that, if you're interested in the literature, is, I forget her first name, but her last name is Bush. And she just, NDE researcher Bush, distressing NDEs, you'll find her literature quite good. And she identified a number of types of distressing NDEs. It's important to note that the high number for distressing NDEs is, you know, I think it's somewhere between 3 and 10%. And she's up on this literature. I don't want to overstep my bounds here because she really is the expert. And she had one herself. And as a result, she did a great deal of research on this and is, you know, like I said, she did a good deal of research, so she's your source for that. But they happen in NDEs for sure. And even if you look at Evan Alexander's NDE, when he had that, was in a coma from a severe bout of spinal meningitis and E. coli, you know, and was unconscious for quite some time, he had a part of his NDE where he describes what he calls the earthworm eye view, something like that, where it's dark and murky and confusing and he's lost and it's stuck, and he's stuck. But eventually that gives way to light and then he goes into this really heavenly realms. In the SDE, you know, I've heard, you know, we've studied deeply 250 cases. I've heard well over 1,000 of these cases, and I have rarely heard a negative SDE, and when I do, it's a misinterpretation of the phenomena, and I help normalize the phenomena, kind of allow them to look at their experience differently, and they usually have a transformation of their view from, you know, negative or scared or cautious to something more like, oh, curiosity or possibility of wonder and positivity in it. Because it's so easy, if you don't know about the SDE, just to be freaked out by it. Because if you don't, you know, believe in an afterlife, or you don't know what to do with when you see angels or elevated beings or have a life review or sees heavenly realms, all that can be a bit freaky if you're of a more, you know, mainstream mindset. So I try to open the aperture at which they view the experience, support them with the evidence that these experiences happen, and give them the feature list and have them begin a process of re-examining their experience from the possibility that this may, that these happen, they're normal, and that there may actually be some positive gifts to be tapped from these experiences.
Any case studies involving someone on death row where, let's say, the person administering the lethal injection or, you know, pulling the switch on the electric chair, have they had an SDE?
I don't have any cases of the of those. I do not have any cases of that type of, you know, as you're describing, and this is a death row type case, which is obviously tragic. Do have a number of cases, you know, half dozen, maybe up to a dozen, maybe, of patients using medical aid in dying. And what's so interesting about this, Richard, is some of these cases suggest, I'll share one with you. This is a woman who was exercising the medical aid in dying in California, and the SDE was reported by a good friend in Massachusetts, that's East Coast of the United States, of course. And what the experiencer suggested or shared with us, we'll call her Sonia, and she reports traveling with this, her friend, Denny. In fact, you know what? This is in the book, in my book, At Heaven's Door, so the full case is there if your viewers are interested. But what she reports is she reports going to meeting Denny, having this huge journey across rivers and deserts, and then climbing ladders and elevating into the sky and seeing heavenly realms, finally coming to a party at which Denny is the guest of honor, not uncommon, and there's all these people scurrying about to prepare for Denny's arrival. But what's interesting, and Sonia doesn't go into this as much in the book, but, you know, I've talked to her many times since, because this is a research question that came up afterwards, after I wrote the book, was that, well, what's the possibility that she arrived early? And what, and you can see this if you look into Sonia's account in my book, you can see that Sonia describes the people hosting the party as scurrying about, trying to get the meal ready. The guests haven't arrived. There were supposed to be these dancers to perform a dance for Denny as she arrived, but nothing's quite ready. And it may suggest that people that use physician aid in dying or other tragic, unexpected death occurrences may arrive too early. In other words, you know, and this challenges our sense that the people on the other side, these wise beings, actually know everything. Because if they knew everything, then they know when we're arriving. They know that, you know, Denny, in this case, had chosen to use medical aid in dying and was arriving earlier than anticipated, if there was already an anticipated time. But I have a few cases like that, which, to boil it down to the, you know, singular statement, suggests that the dying, when they use medical aid and dying, seem to surprise or seem to arrive a bit earlier than the welcoming party had anticipated.
That's interesting. Fascinating.
Very interesting.
We'll take another time out and come back with more questions from our YouTube live chat, William Peters. And he is the founder of the Shared Crossing Project, sharedcrossing.com. We'll remind you about that online course as well when we come back. Stay with us.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the hosts of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money, so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
I call it the miracle molecule, carbon 60 or C60, for my good friends at C60evo.com. And I take a tablespoon every morning. It delivers more than 172 times the power of vitamin C. C60 is a known antiviral, antioxidant, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory. It's a remedy that works. C60 Evo users consistently enjoy better sleep and wake up feeling refreshed. This alone is worth the cost of the bottle. I sleep like a baby. I have no aches or pains. Zero. I'm 58, and I don't have a gray hair on my head. Get your miracle in a bottle, C60, from c60evo.com/Richard-Serrett. c60evo.com/Richard-Serrett. Use the coupon code EVRS at checkout and save an additional 10%. This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. If you have a medical concern, please contact your healthcare provider.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
All right, once again, here are the details on the Shared Death Experience, Transformational Journeys of Life and Love Beyond Death. It's a 7-module live online course presented by our guest tonight, William Peters, and the founder of the Shared Crossing Project, author of At Heaven's Door, and it begins Wednesday, April the 27th. Again, it's 7 weeks, so you've got April 27th to June the 8th, every Wednesday from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you use the code Shared Crossing, all in caps, and the number 10, Shared Crossing 10, you get 10% off that course. All right, let's go back to the YouTube live chat. And Renee Image writes, I had an NDE and I was happy to go. I even went through the tunnel and saw the light, but a voice told me I needed to go back. Does that happen often?
Yes, that does happen quite a bit with the near-death experience. And they're often told, the experiencer, that it's not their time, that they need to go back to their human life and complete something. And or, you know, live out some you know, the reasons I can't say exactly, but most people will say that they realize they had to come back to do something, to complete something. The it seems like the human existence serves us in some you know, educational way. That sounds a little bit dry, but there's some learning, some evolution of our soul spirit that we incarnate as humans to experience. It's a transformational process towards, you know, positive growth in a certain way, in an evolutionary sense. So if you're asked to go back, I'm sorry, I know a lot of, and in my clinical practice, there was a time when a lot of near-death experiencers would be coming to me to share their disappointment that they had to come back, that they missed the euphoria, the good feelings, the peace, and the absence of strife and suffering that is inherent in the human realm.
Getting into NDEs for a moment here, the near-death experience, because they've been reported throughout history. But has the advent of anesthesia perhaps diminished reduced the number of NDEs experienced because of, you know, coming out of the fog of anesthesia, perhaps people forget about them? Is there any way of even knowing that?
I think the comment you made at the close there, which is it's difficult to know. I think that's what is true, is it's hard to know what the advent of anesthesia, how it impacts one's experience or one's ability to remember their NDE. One thing that's really salient here is that Dr. Pim von Lommel did research, actually a fabulous research article. He's a cardiologist, and he did a study on NDEs and his patients and other patients receiving cardiac procedures, and he found that I believe a 17% of patients in his study who received a cardiac interventions, usually surgical, and I do believe all of these included anesthesia, but 17% of them reported a near-death experience. And that article was published in The Lancet, which is a very well-respected international medical journal. And then Pim wrote a beautiful book called Consciousness Beyond Life, The Science of the Near-Death Experience. And that book came out about a decade ago. It's a spectacular book, I might add. So I would turn that viewer's questions in that direction, because Pim von Lommel looks really at the role of medical interventions on people's capacity to have NDEs.
The science of the NDE, that's interesting, because, does that suggest that at some point we will understand the mechanics of an NDE or an SDE? I don't know. People often, you know, they talk about quantum physics. That seems to be the sort of the underlying, you know, answer to everything that we now consider to be paranormal. Is there a field of science that actually believes that they can understand this, they can measure it, they can, I don't know, come up with a formula at some point for this?
Well, I mean, honestly, this is kind of beyond my expertise. I mean, I'm a psychotherapist. I work with, you know, persons typically at the end of life or in grief and bereavement who have had these experiences and need to process, integrate them, and, you know, make meaning of them so they can go on living with the benefits of these experiences, because they're typically referred to as gifts. And I help people, you know, throughout that entire process, the dying, the survivors, all everyone. But the actual science about, you know, how these happen and why they happen to some, for me, a huge question, which I am researching now, is why do these experiences happen for some and why they don't happen for, and not everybody. I mean, why do some people have them, some people don't? That's a whole huge question, and obviously that involves, I mean, I'm not looking for a theory of everything, if you will, to describe why the SDE happens, why the NDE happens. I would love to stumble upon it, but my goal is really more how to help people have these experiences, how to help people integrate them into their lives, and to highlight for the medical community, end-of-life community, and general public at large, the real gifts of the SDE, the sense that, you know, human death is not an end, but a doorway into a benevolent afterlife, and that relationships with our loved ones seem to continue, and that the SDE is a gateway experience into another type of relationship, not a human relationship. I mean, you know, human death ends a human life, but it doesn't end a relationship between a human and the surviving consciousness. So,
well, I might have to take another time out here. Pardon the interruption. But when we come back, maybe you can sort of just give us. Obviously, we want people to take the 7-week course at sharedcrossing.com, but maybe a few teases about how we can increase our chances of having an SDE if we have, you know, a loved one that's getting ready to cross over. And we'll go back to the YouTube live chat. Joe asks, can deceased friends actually visit us in our dreams, or is that just us thinking and dreaming of them? Or maybe another way of sort of approaching that question would be, can that be part of the shared death experience through the in a dream state?
Yeah, so super question, and one that we, my research team is discerning about, and we have a number of, questions and frameworks that allow us to tease these apart. So you can have an SDE when you're sleeping, but it wouldn't be in a dream state. It would be a visionary realm of sorts, and I say that because people, when we ask them, will say, oh, no, this was more than a dream. It was more real than my typical dreams, and it wasn't fragmented. It wasn't, you know, it didn't have kind of the incoherence and people from different state parts of our lives and distortion. That's typical dream life. These SDEs, as with dream visions and visitations, if they happen when sleeping, they're radically different than dreams, so completely different phenomena. Because of the clarity, because of the heightened sense of reality, if they will, because that people say they're more real than real, and so they're qualitatively different in that regard. And then in terms of whether they're an SDE or a vision or visitation depends on the messaging in it, or the phenomenological value, as we say. So in an SDE, there has to be the sense that you're participating in some sort of journey. You're observing, you're watching, you're accompanying, or you're guiding. Sometimes you get called in actually to guide the dying along the way, but it's really about the deceased person's initial journey from this life into an afterlife. Visions and visitations are different. They usually have messages involved, and they usually appear right in front of or in some way to the surviving loved one, and they appear somewhat stationary. They're not moving. They're there. They have a message. They're usually wearing presenting with some sort of identifiable clothing or expression or something that is known to the experiencer as validation for who this person is. So they're different. They're different in that way. But great question, and one we ferret out quite a bit.
All right, so I know this is something that you delve into in the 7-week course, again, at sharedcrossing.com, Wednesdays 5 to 6:30 Pacific, p.m. April 27th to June the 8th. Use the code Shared Crossing and the numeral 10, all caps, Shared Crossing and the number 10 for a 10% discount. And that is how can you maybe increase your chances of having a shared death experience?
Yes. So what we have found in the research is that about two-thirds of our shared death experience research participants have some sort of mindfulness meditative practice. And that means they either pray or meditate or do yoga or a martial art or walk in nature. They have some sort of practice that allows them to both be receptive and attune, if you will, to their self, their surroundings, and to others. And also they have these receptive qualities that involve kind of a heightened awareness of their feelings and sensations, their phenomenological experience. All that seems to point towards an increased ability to have an SDE. The other thing that really helps is, you know, and this is a big part of the teaching I do when I'm working, you know, when I'm teaching groups on this, how to have an NDE, SDE, I shouldn't say NDE, SDE or other end-of-life phenomena, is that you really work on your psychological or emotional unfinished business with your loved ones, because that unfinished business, you know, regrets, ill will, sense of, you know, bad blood, if you will, between people, unfinished business needs to be addressed, because if it doesn't get addressed, it serves as a hook to keep the dying here and to keep some interference in the clear spiritual communication between the dying and the surviving loved one. And then there's a number of other steps I'll talk about in this workshop and others about how it is that you essentially, if you're the dying, you learn how to maintain your consciousness through death, or if you lose it, how to reconnect with it, and then turn your attention to your loved one or loved ones in the human realm and invite them to join you in the spiritual in your spirit realm. And that that's a series of steps. It's too long for this dialogue, but one that I do go into in a variety of workshops, most notably the Pathway workshop, which I'm not offering now, but my team and I will offer it next fall. But another thing is you need to know about these experiences. I say the first step in any training to have an SDE, I think you can have them spontaneously for sure, and most of our research participants have had them. But to know that it exists, it's a possibility, and to know a lot about it and to know how you might be, what the phenomena are, the features are that you can be aware of if you're with somebody dying, or if you're remote and don't know someone's dying, but you end up having these features, then you can welcome them, and they serve as kind of portals to go deeper into this experience. Really important data point. 41% of all SDE experiencers in our research have more than one, which suggests that once you have one, you can have more. So the gate here to get through is, how do you have your first SDE? Because after that, you're likely to have more. And I'm a perfect example of that. I've had numerous ones because now I feel like I know the doorways, and when that door opens, I'm going to say, yes, I'm ready to go. So a great question and an important one, so I appreciate it. But, you know, one other thing to say to your listeners here, Richard, is at the sharecrossing.com, we have a story library. You can go right to our website. Go right there. On the story library, you can hear about 8 different SDE experiences from our research participants. They're short. They're like, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes, but they really give you an idea for the SDE, initially anyway. There's, you know, the best description that I could provide was actually in the book, because I had a lot more time to do so. I can provide a lot more background information. But it's, you know, but I think if your listeners really want to have these SDEs with themselves, you know, themselves, with their loved ones, what have you, it's really important to know about them, because getting comfortable with each of these features then will serve as a doorway, an entryway into the experience.
I mean, obviously, you know, we all want to live long, healthy lives. But do you now look forward to death, but are you excited at the prospect of death?
My friends joke about this with me. They tease me and say, "You're ready to go right now, William." And that's true. If it's time for me to go, I don't notice within me any fear of death or any anxiety about death. I'm excited about it when it happens. The most important thing for me, and I would say to your viewers as well, is that we understand that we're here to be and do certain things, to have certain experiences, perhaps to evolve certain characteristics, you know, virtues or what have you, develop in some way. Make sure that you get that done first, because it seems like if you don't, you might have to come back again and do it. And I know you hear the bias there that might suggest that I'm not so excited about having to come back again. Well, everything I know suggests that the afterlife, the spirit realm, is a lot more enjoyable than being here. Not that there's not joy to be had here. This realm has, as the Buddhists say, 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows. We're fine with the joys. It's the sorrows that get us hooked up here and stay, make us suffer, if you will. So I think, my goal is to just live fully and hopefully have the ability and insight to do what I came here to do, which I'm feeling pretty strongly that the teaching I'm doing is what I'm supposed to be doing here about the SDE.
Well, William, always enjoy chatting with you. Thank you so much for this.
Richard, thank you so much for having me on your show. And it's just always a pleasure to be with you.
William Peters, Shared Crossing Project, and the website sharedcrossing.com.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at strangeplanetpodcast.com.